Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to your questions before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Geez, is there anything going on in the world of football as it pertains to the Seahawks? Anything at all that would be a topic? Let me think.
Let's see. Well, no, I guess, well, it was...
That Brown fellow, last name Brown, Antonio Brown.
Here we go.
I thought we were done, John, and I saw
well,
that...
we are. I mean, it's like, okay, here's what I'm going to say up front. If he's such a good friend of Russell Wilson, did Damon Snacks Harrison just sign... on the practice squad, right?
Right.
Okay. Did Michael Kendricks just sign on the practice squad?
Yes.
Practice squad guys that experience get $12,000 a week. Did Demaryius Randall sign with the practice squad and just came onto the active roster?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think Antonio Brown needs to do?
Sign
to the practice squad. Will he do that? Probably not. I mean, because maybe he'll have other options. I can't guarantee that. But if that's going to be the case and he wants to sign to the practice squad with no immediate guarantee when he can get on the roster, then I can see it's a consideration. Anything above that, because you now see a pattern where John Snyder is able to build a pretty firm base of good players that can be used, but they made the sacrifice of doing it for $12,000 a week. Think Antonio Brown's going to do that, as much money as he needs?
I wouldn't think so, and that, to me, is the least of the issues with him. We were talking about it to open the show, John, and I'm looking at an offense that isn't broken. There's nothing to be fixed. They don't have really a weak spot where you're going, man, if they could just get a quality player at this spot, they'd be so much better. I mean, what you're talking about the highest-scoring offense of the league right now. Mm-hmm. You don't need to even risk that he's a good guy or a bad guy now, that he's changed or not changed. Why even assume that risk when you're set at receiver? You've got Dorsett coming back. We don't know what he's going to be. Maybe Gordon's going to be here. We don't know. But Freddie Swain has stepped up. Moore has stepped up. DK is a superstar in the making. Tyler Lockett's is as consistent as you could possibly hope for. And the offense is cooking, to use everybody's phrase. Why even mess with it?
Well, see, here's where the problem comes in. Okay, and first, again, if he signs with the practice squad, maybe it's a consideration. But, how many touches is he going to get? And realize, I mean, we watched this now with Tampa Bay because it was kind of shying away from that for the first couple of weeks because, they didn't have the best, at that time, duo in football, wide receiver duo, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, together. But when they're together and they're healthy, the ball doesn't go to the tight end because they're going to be targeted, 7, 8, 9 times, okay? And that's the case right now with the emerging best wide receiver duo in football with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And so now what happens is you saw it for weeks. People were saying, well, they're not getting the ball to Gronkowski. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. Well, if you put in Antonio Brown, then the ball doesn't go to the tight ends. And how much three receiver sets you can do. I know people keep ignoring the fact that the Seahawks, at the beginning of the season, tripled the number of two tight end sets that they had because they went from 11% to 32%, and it slowed down a little bit because they faced a bunch of teams that have cornerback problems, and so if that's going to be the case, you want to match up with more three receiver sets. But once you start to get into this phase right now where you're taking on the Rams, you're taking on the Cardinals and that, now you want to get a little bit more of the two tight end sets. And so now if you do this, how's Antonio going to get on the field, and how's he going to handle it if he's not?
Well, John, if you had to guess in reading between the lines, what do you think the biggest reason is why the Seahawks are pushing to sign him?
They're not pushing to sign him. That's the thing that's wrong about this.
Well, no, I'm looking at this right now, John. Adam Schefter has a story here. Seahawks are not positioned to make a push to sign him.
Yeah, okay, so he said that did you read further that he said that they're in a position to do it, but they've not made an offer.
Okay.
If they've not made an offer, how are they negotiating?
Okay, well, let's say they're just mildly interested.
Yeah.
Do you think it has to do with wanting Russell Wilson wanting him here? Is that the number one reason?
No, it's a matter that John Snyder wants to take every opportunity to make the team better as best he can. And, you know, and look what he makes. Like today, it went under the radar. They got Ray Armstrong. Now, Ray's had some issues off the field himself, you know, because he can be a little bit too powerful. But, I mean, he's a real good linebacker special teams player. But now they've got three players that are currently on the practice squad that's willing to come and, you know, play for less. You know, Ray's not a bad acquisition. Certainly it was a great acquisition getting Damon Snacks Harrison and then getting Michael Kendricks to come in, because now you have all these different options, because now what you're looking at is, particularly with the 6 days it's going to take to be able to go ahead and get them through the COVIDs and get them into the facility and then start to do it, you're just building up a good group of players that you can keep, and if needed you can put them on the field. That's smart. But now to go ahead and take an Antonio Brown and jump those three guys who were willing to do that, not counting even Demaryius Randall, I mean, that would just be wrong. I would think that would create too many problems. And remember, you saw the problems that were created when they made the trade for Percy Harvin. I mean, the young group of receivers that helped get this team to the Super Bowl, the Doug Baldwins, the Golden Tates, the Jermaine Kearse, they didn't like that, because it's like, wait a second. You just traded and gave this guy $11 million a year, and we're not even being hardly paid? Is that fair? And so if you come back and you give something to Antonio Brown, I just think it's a mistake.
John, if you had to guess, how about just naming a couple other teams that might be interested in Brown besides the Seahawks?
You can maybe say Baltimore. But you notice they didn't do anything, and John Harbaugh doesn't seem to be too fond of it. I mean, it could be a consideration for the Green Bay Packers, but I don't think he's their cup of tea. A team that still would be looking for wide receivers that did it last year and it didn't work out, would be the Las Vegas Raiders. Certainly New England, they're going to be in search of it, but they already made the mistake of bringing him in last year. So in the end, it's like, there's an Indianapolis. I mean, but that's not a Chris Ballard type of guy.
Mm. John, well, let's talk about another guy you just mentioned briefly, and that was Michael Kendricks, who they did bring back, signed him to the practice squad. I mean, none of us really know physically where he's at after a serious knee injury, but is he somebody you expect to be just depth, sort of insurance policy, or somebody that maybe they're not quite as pleased with Barton as we thought they might be, so that's why they brought Kendricks in? How do you read his?
It has nothing to do with any opinions that they have of players currently on the team, because they have a very good linebacking group, and it's a deep linebacking group. But you can also see, like you saw last year with the running backs, things can get thin real quick, because they had a real deep group of running backs, and all of a sudden they go through a 1 month period and lose three running backs and pulling Marshawn Lynch out of retirement. And I think that they got the little bit of a scare when all of a sudden here's Bruce Irvin going down, because remember, they started the season with seven linebackers, and so Bruce Irvin goes down, then you've got Jordan Brooks going down, and so if they lost one more linebacker, then all of a sudden they're scrambling. And so this is one where it's kind of a mutual type of thing, because you're looking in the case of Damon Snacks Harrison and Michael Kendricks and Ray Armstrong and Demaryius Randall. It's like, okay, they get into the first month of the season and there's nothing for them. And so now at least get in there, get the COVID testing, start to get yourself in football shape, and then see where you stand. And I think that you can see, like in the case of Damon Harrison, here he was, he comes in, he signs with Seattle, and what's the first thing that happens? Vita Vea goes down, here comes Tampa Bay calling. And what did Damon say? No. Right now, I'm staying here in Seattle. Then I think another team or two called. And so it's like, now you're kind of back in with the chance to get back in the league. And so it's like it's kind of like a gateway to get back in a very difficult year.
John, on Monday when Pete Carroll said about Jamal Adams, he was noncommittal about him, and we all thought he'd be ready this week, but Carroll said he's not practicing today. So when you read between the lines, do you think he's going to play this week or not?
I still think he has a chance to play, yeah. I mean, because remember, it's no different than what Pete's doing, because being extra cautious with players, and of course he was even going to be more cautious a couple weeks ago, because with that bye week hanging over, giving anybody the chance to get that extra week to get healthy was huge. And so that's what he ended up doing. But like you remember Quentin Dunbar, I mean, he comes in and same thing. I mean, he didn't go through practice on Wednesday, but then he practiced on Thursday, and he ended up playing in the game. Now, again, you can see he's still trying to get in shape because I think he got a little dehydrated at one point and had to kind of go into the locker room and kind of get taken care of, but he was able to come back. But, you know, I think that, you know, you got to make the judgment then, but it's like you're not making the judgment on Wednesday. You still have a couple of days to judge.
John, it was interesting seeing this story. I was watching NFL Live this morning, and they were talking about the quarterback switch in Miami. And they were interviewing, they had Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was, you know, pretty open about his feelings, saying, you know, he was brokenhearted. His quote was, "I basically got fired yesterday, and my day today consisted of Zoom meetings with the guy who fired me and sitting in a room with the guy who replaced me for 4 hours." So it was, I mean, A, he had to know, obviously, he's a placeholder, that that's their future. Do you think he was misled or something, that he wasn't treated properly in the way they made this? I mean, Brian Flores says he regrets that his players found out about their switch through social media rather than from him. So do you look at this sort of being mishandled?
A little bit, yeah, because you know, you got to be open, particularly for a guy that has done so much for your team. I mean, he's helped them get to a 3-3 start. You know, some of the, you know, they've won three easy games. One, of course, was a big one when they beat the San Francisco 49ers. But no, I think what you're looking at is that he's had this happen to him so many times, and he's pretty much realizing, you know, he's getting close to the end here. Now, he's been very supportive of Tua. He's been a mentor to Tua. But I think what he was thinking, and of course, COVID's changed everything, because they were supposed to have the bye week at week 11. Okay. And so the thought was that, okay, Tua would probably go in week 11 and then start to play in week 12, because that's where the easy part of their schedule is. You know, they've got a 4-game stretch where they got to play like New England, not New England, but they got to play Denver, Cincinnati, the Jets, and another easy team. And so it's like, okay, you want to put them in a situation to win. But now it's going to be a little bit more difficult. And this is not good for Seattle, is that, you know, he's got Arizona and the Rams as his next two games. And, you know, if they can eat up that bad offensive line that they have, you know, that could cause all kind of problems for Tua. So I think that it's understandable that he's disappointed, because, again, it had happened 4 or 5 weeks before it probably was going to happen. And, of course, if you can't communicate it, it's not going to go over well.
John, the Raiders are scheduled to play Tampa Bay on Sunday Night Football, but that might be a little bit in jeopardy. They sent home their starting five on the offensive line after Trent Brown tested positive for COVID-19 today.
Yeah, it's got to be a concern, and you don't know how long that stay is going to be at home, you know, because is that going to be a 2-3-4-day stay? I mean, you got to have active testing and everything else, but I think it's a little scary because, you know, you've got problems in Carolina because they have a whole bunch of either practice squad or offensive linemen having their issues, but not as bad as, I guess, what's going on with the Raiders, because when you send your line home, which is the wise thing to do because you don't want the spread, you just got to make sure it doesn't spread.
John, I was reading this story about Le'Veon Bell being in Kansas City, and his quote was, "It's a chance to reinvent himself." He says, "I played at a high level for so long. I had 2 years where it has not been a high level, and people kind of look at it like that. So I wanted to get here and get my feet back under me, get in a good offense, get the ball when I can," the operative word, "and not have too much pressure on me, just play football." So that comment makes it sound like he understands, okay, you're not going to be the primary focus in this offense. Is he a guy you think is capable of rebuilding his image and looking like a good teammate if he does accept a secondary role on this team?
Yeah, I guess you can look at it as a good teammate if he can accept it. And I think at this stage, you can look at it two ways. Is that, you know, you saw Jameis Winston go down to New Orleans and took a $1 million contract just to learn and relearn football under Sean Payton. Okay, certainly he can learn a lot of things right now from Andy Reid. And you could say, okay, maybe that's a good thing. But again, his playing time is going to be so minimal because, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is one of the best backs in football right now. I mean, he's just so good, and you saw what he was able to do when they were able to, you know, put up over 200 yards of rushing the other day. And so it's like, it's not like he's going to beat him out. I mean, he's accepting the fact that he is going to be a backup and maybe help out a little bit on some passing downs, you know, maybe get into a rotation. I mean, he's not going to get more than like maybe 6 or 7 carries maybe in a game. But you can also look at it at the other side of it. It's like, okay, I've been 28 years old, you know, I lost out and sat around and got a little chunky, you know, on my ear holding out from the Steelers when I turned down $14.5 million and didn't earn a dime. And so it's like, here's my chance to stay in football, maybe go to a Super Bowl, get a few checks like that, and not have to do much. Because remember, I mean, he as much as it had to anger him that he didn't get his long-term deal, but he didn't deserve it the way he handled it, is that it's like, hey, I'm just going to sit back and just kind of relax here in Kansas City. And, you know, he's going to make $8.5 million as far as what the Jets have to pay him. And, of course, a million of that, well, less than a million, it's like about $700,000 is going to be paid by Kansas City. So it's like, hey, I'm making $8.5 million. It's like, if they want to use me, they use me. If they don't want to use me, who cares?
John, we know the Seahawks are facing a tough five-game schedule. The next five games here at Arizona, home for San Francisco, at Buffalo, at the Rams, and then back home against Arizona again. How long do you think they'll remain unbeaten?
You think? I mean, the one that I think is going to be really tough, particularly after two division games, I think is going to be at Buffalo early, because they're going to have to put everything they can into the game against the Rams and into the game against the Cardinals to be able to win. So, I mean, I think that because, again, you have now questions about the Rams, because they go 4-0 in the NFC East. They give up 28-3 against Buffalo on the road, and that's why I bring up Buffalo again. And then, of course, then they go and they just get destroyed by San Francisco. And so, they're good, and I think they're now the main challengers to this team in the division. But I think you come off the emotion of these two games, I think they could be a little bit flat for the Buffalo game.
The Rams are hosting the Bears on Monday Night Football, John. You look at Chicago 5-1, the Rams 4-2. Chicago's a 6.5-point underdog in that game. I suppose you still root for the Bears in that game if you're a Seahawks fan?
Of course.
Are you sure? When you say of course, they're 5-1. They only have one loss. The Rams have two.
Well, what do your odds makers say about them?
Well, everybody, and you included.
I mean, if your odd makers say they're...
Everybody says they're like paper tigers, John. They're not very good, the Bears.
Well, what are the odds makers saying? They're agreeing. What, 6.5 points is what they're calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like, that's almost like you're saying, here's a Ram team at 4-2, and they're going against a 2-4 team. I mean, isn't 6.5 points a lot? I'd say it is. And I think it's a statement that, and remember, the Bears now... Say what you want, they have a very good defense. That we know, and it's going to probably maybe be a low-scoring game. But do you realize that they're the sixth lowest-scoring team in football? Sixth lowest. They cannot run the football whatsoever. They're one of the three or four worst teams running the football. And so, what they have to do is win a low-scoring game. Now, can they do that against Sean Payton? Can they do that against the running game and against Jared Goff and all that stuff? That's a big debate. And so, you're rooting for the Bears because, again, if they are paper tigers, it's like the odds makers that you believe in are saying they're 6.5-point underdogs.
John, we've got the Giants and Eagles matching up for Thursday night football, which in most years you'd go, okay.
I'm thinking of the game.
Yeah, that's a collective reaction from the football community out there. I mean, this is dreadful football. You just talked about the NFC East and the Rams, making hay there. Who's the best team in this division and who's the worst? Because to me, they're all pretty much on par with each other.
Yeah, because, now you start to look at it. People are starting to go through the schedule. And, I did over the weekend, and I thought maybe if the Cowboys – because really what's going to happen is the only games that these teams are going to win is division games. Dallas, they've got two wins, but one was a 30-27 win over the New York Giants on the road. And so I still think Dallas still has the chance, even though Andy Dalton didn't look great the other day, mainly because – they still have a great three receiver set and Ezekiel Elliott when he doesn't fumble. So I still kind of give that a little bit of the edge, but right now that edge doesn't look good, particularly with players going off the record and saying the coaching staff isn't prepared and not doing any teaching, really kind of ripping everything. So that's not a good sign. And then you look at Philadelphia, they've got nothing left. You see that injury report today. It's been bad so far because, they've got three starting offensive linemen on injured reserve, and they had to put Jason Peters on injured reserve. Their two tight ends are out. They have maybe one wide receiver in DeSean Jackson, and they're basically taking guys off the practice squad and putting them out there. Their starting running back, Miles Sanders, is going to miss the game. You'll say they don't have Zach Ertz. They don't have Dallas Goedert. This is a mess. And so, how can they survive? And they're sitting there 1-4-1, and they lost, for heaven's sakes, to the Cincinnati Bengals. Or they got a tie with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's almost worse.
Yeah.
Hey, John, what's going on with the Arizona offensive line? They seem to be greatly improved, at least with the pass protection, because I think Kyler Murray's on a pace to be sacked 26 times this year after being sacked 48 times last year.
Yeah, they're better, but I think a lot of that is just, I think, more scheme than anything else. But they are better. I mean, because they got DJ Humphrey re-signed. They don't have J.R. Sweezy. He's on IR, but they like Justin Murray, and they think there's not much of a drop-off with Justin Murray out there at guard because they just gave him a two-year extension. And so, they're better without any question. They're getting by. But again, a lot of it is because they're not getting the ball downfield consistently. A lot of that's inconsistent passing by Skyler Murray. But the one thing that you can say that they're doing really well, and you credit the offensive line for this, they're running the ball really well. I mean, real good running right now with Kenyon Drake. He's doing well. I mean, Kyler Murray's really tough to be able to stop, but they've been inconsistent with the passing game, but no, it is an improved offensive line.
Hey, John, where are you at with the Saints and in particular Drew Brees? I know we touched on it earlier and people are saying, oh man, his arm's gone. He's not who he was. And they're still hanging in there at 3-2. They got the Panthers coming up this weekend, but do you look at this as his last year? Is he cooked in your mind, or where are you at after seeing him for a few weeks?
He's not cooked, but I think he's a little burned right now. And, because in the last 2 years, you've watched in like November and December, his arm strength has, started to drift away. But you saw that he was able to have a big comeback in the last game to be able to win, and he's still sitting at 3-2. You don't write him off. But again, a lot of times what you have to look at is what is around him. And, they don't have much at the receiver pass catching areas right now because, Michael Thomas hasn't played. He's been out and he's a 150 catch guy from a year ago. Emmanuel Sanders is just now starting to pick up the offense. And so he was kind of invisible for about 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, so you have Jared Cook and a bunch of no names. And so that, I think, plays into it too. But I still think this will be the last year. And it may not necessarily be because of age. It's because their run is pretty well done because, they have to make a big decision on whether to keep him or let him go into the broadcasting business. But that's going to eat up all their cap. They're over like $65 million over the cap, and they have to let a lot of players go. And they're not going to be a playoff team next year with all the changes that they're going to have to make.
John, great stuff as always. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, we had a bunch of people hanging on the phone lines that we weren't able to get in. We got a ton of texts coming in on the Antonio Brown thing. So for people just joining the show, or if you weren't able to get in, we'll go one more segment on that, give everybody an opportunity to express their opinion on Antonio Brown. You want to see the Seahawks take a shot at Antonio Brown? Let me hear why. If you don't want him here, tell us why. 421-3776, toll free, 866-979-3776. We'll get to your calls and texts coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you've got a radio in your home. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. It becomes a radio right there for you. We've got an abbreviated show once again today. Game 2 of the World Series happening just past the top of the hour at about 5:10. We'll turn you over to first pitch for Game 2. Dodgers took Game 1 in pretty easy fashion, so we'll see what happens in this one. But you guys can catch all the action right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. But we wanted to give everybody a chance to weigh in because the phone lines were packed, and we got through the segment with a bunch of people still hanging on who wanted to comment. In case you're just tuning in, the story from Adam Schefter that the Seahawks seem to be a front runner or the team he's
positioned
isolating.
Well,
yeah, he's the one that he's they are the ones he's naming right out of the gate. Seahawks are positioning to acquire Antonio Brown. Doesn't mean they will, but
he's not eligible until after week 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah, next week.
So, getting your response. Tons of texts coming in, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, and you guys can jump on the phone lines 421-3776, toll free 866-979-3776. Do you want Antonio Brown here despite who he's been off the field, despite who he's been in these multiple locker rooms? Are you okay with that, or are you somebody saying, no, I don't want any part of that?
I get a kick out of some of the ones here that are saying about, that you want to prevent him from going to another team. just to make sure that the, you know, the Antonio Brown, if he's with Tampa Bay or the Ravens or the Titans or the Chiefs, that you don't want to have him eliminate you on your Super Bowl run. That part of it didn't really occur to me. I think he's going to mess things up wherever he goes.
Yeah, and it's not like they're shutting down everybody, but then once they get to Antonio Brown, he's going to be a problem. Every receiver's a problem. Is he going to be any different than any other receiver on any other roster if the Seahawks have to face him? I mean, everybody tears up this defense, so they're allowing more passing yards than any defense in the league. So I don't know that he's going to be a real difference maker. Let's head to the phone lines. Danny on line one in Mount Vernon. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. Outside of his personal issues off the field, which I wouldn't want on the team for anyway, I mean, you got a rising star in DK Metcalf, who's everyone says is a great attitude, humble guy, and Tyler Lockett's really been the same way. I mean, do you really want that attitude from Antonio Brown rubbing off on him?
No.
Affecting how he'll be in the future?
No.
So, I say no.
All right, Danny. Appreciate the phone call. And he hits on something. I think it was David Moore we were talking to. And he was talking about the receiver room and how nobody in that room talks about targets or talks about catches or, you know, like it's just
how rare is that in a receiver room to not have egos?
Unbelievable. I mean, and maybe that changes at some point, but at this point that everybody's just about the team and they don't care who gets the touches as long as they're winning. That's a rare, rare commodity, especially in a receiver's room. You bring in a guy who complained about 17 targets in a game. I mean, I just, there's no upside to him. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know.
Whether you feel like it's still Tyler Lockett is the number one or DK Metcalf is the number one, you've got one of the best, if not the best, tandem of receivers in the league. So just stick with what you have right now, averaging 33 points a game.
Most in the NFL. Your offense is not broken. You don't currently have a need. If you had a need, I could see you assuming some level of risk with a player. Even then, I wouldn't want Brown. But you don't have a need on offense.
Yeah,
you
it's almost
don't.
Like sometimes when you see all the stars that are assembled in basketball and just one ball, it doesn't. Yeah. It looks great on paper until you actually get it out there on the court and see that it's not going to work.
Yeah, let's head out to Sumner, bring in Brian on line two. Brian, how are you?
Not too bad.
What do you think?
I just wanted to say, man, we don't need him. Our offense is humming. It's going well. I mean, you don't throw a monkey wrench in the middle of that. It's not a video game. We're not the Cowboys. We're not Jerry Jones. We're not playing fantasy football here. We don't need him.
All right. Good stuff, Brian. Appreciate the phone call. That opens up a line, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Out to Woodinville, Sebastian is with us. Sebastian, what do you think?
I was just thinking, if we had Antonio Brown, we already have Ty Lockett and DK Metcalf, yes. And we have DJ Moore and Sweet. So, like another team, like, let's say...
All right. Well, Sebastian, your phone's cutting in and out, man. Sorry, we're having a hard time hearing you. I couldn't tell if he was pro or con on Antonio Brown, but
yeah,
could you?
I couldn't tell.
All right.
I think he was against it.
Okay.
He should be.
We'll move on then. Head out to Bellingham. Evan has been waiting. Evan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. So, naturally, I don't want him on the team, but hey, if they sign him and we stop talking about these rumors, that'll be great. And personally, I don't think we're in Antonio Brown away from winning a Super Bowl. So if we sign him and then we can focus on our defense, that's the best thing we can do.
All right, Evan. Appreciate the phone call, man. And by the way, if they sign him, the conversation doesn't stop. It just gets ramped up. How should they use him? Whose touches is he going to take away from? Who's going to suffer because of his presence? Did they use him up? Are they using him the right way? Why don't they do this with him more? He can do this. How come they did that with him? It didn't work. The conversation only intensifies if they sign him.
Don't you picture a Jimmy Graham situation, too?
Yes, or the Percy Harvin.
The body language, you know, just looking bad when he wasn't getting targets. And, you know, it seemed like they were trying to force things into the game plan with him. And, yeah, I don't get it. If it's a complimentary guy, like, you know, go ahead. You know, let's see what Philip Dorsett has. You know, maybe he's the third or fourth receiver. That's fine. And Josh Gordon, if you want to bring him in, fine. I have a few issues with that, but that's okay. Bring him in. But this one, it's just, it's honestly, Bob, it's crazy that we're even talking about it.
Yeah, I can't believe it's back. I thought this was a dead issue, but apparently not. Let's head to Portland. CeCe is with us. CeCe, what do you think?
I guess the question I'd say, thank you for having me, is what would you do if that was your son? You know, would you want him to have an opportunity to be able to play for the Seahawks, even if the situation was identical? You would want him to have an opportunity.
No,
so
I wouldn't.
Why not extend it to him?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't want that for your child?
No, if my son did all the things that this guy's done, I'd say, you know what, son?
You just say, throw him away.
Daddy believes in second and third chances, but you've used them all up.
Okay. Well, you know, other parents may think differently or other people may think differently, but I think it's easy to say things, but most people would want their child to have another chance. So if you would want that for you or yours, why not extend that to somebody else?
Well, and appreciate the phone call there, CC. Jim explaining for his sons, which he's got two 16-year-olds, you tell them, no, you get chances in life. You don't get unlimited chances.
Well, especially, and CC, I hope I didn't come across as rude there, but I just, you know.
He answered her question.
I mean, some of those things that Antonio Brown has done, CC, I'd encourage you just to go to his Wikipedia page and take a look at that and see if you feel the same way.
Yeah, it's not about, you know, a guy who's just kind of been a malcontent as a player. I mean, that's not unique. Who he's been on the field and in the locker room, not something I want here, but not unique. Doesn't make him a terrible person. What makes him a terrible person is what he's done off the field. The things you know that he's done. All right. And then you've got the things that are still hanging out there, legal matters attached to a rape allegation, a sexual assault allegation.
He attacked a moving truck driver.
Yeah, we saw that on film. Yeah. We saw him screaming at losing his mind on the mother of his child on film. He said, let me go ahead and post that to Instagram. That'll be fun. What does that tell you? I mean, it's not just about he's a great receiver and boy, wouldn't it be great if we were here. There's a lot that comes with this guy that's really unappealing. Quickly, let's head to Renton. Dave is with us. Dave, what do you think?
Hey, gentlemen. Well, you know, seeing that, you know, kind of looking at what Baltimore did a few weeks ago with Earl Thomas, you know, they talked in the locker room. I think, you know, maybe Pete should do something similar to that and find out if these guys really want this guy here. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, Russell's been lobbying for him. I get that. But I agree with just about everybody else. Our offense is humming. I mean, why screw with it? This guy is not going to be happy here.
That's a great point, Dave. Why would you mess with that? And to me, it's all coming from Russell that he wants him.
Maybe it is. And that's I can respect a quarterback who wants another weapon, who's just imagining the possibilities. That all of that makes sense. But it's not a need. I keep coming back to that. You're not shorthanded. You're not underachieving as an offense right now. You are dominating as an offense. And I understand that, you know, maybe somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody will go down. It'd be nice to have that kind of talent sitting there waiting in the wings. It's not worth what he potentially brings to the party.
Besides quarterback, it's the best position on the team.
Yeah, the whole offense. You can't really point to a spot and go, man, their tight ends are weak. Their O-line is weak. Their running backs are weak. No, you feel great. That was, again, the question last night. If they make a trade coming up towards November 3rd, the deadline, it's got to be for defense. They don't really have a need on offense. And this is before the Antonio Brown stuff popped. I was looking at it last night going, what do they address? It would be just a depth move. It wouldn't be, you know, finally they fill this gaping hole on the offense. It doesn't exist.
If it happens, maybe we can find out from Pete Carroll what the reasons are and the rationale, and maybe he can explain himself better than he did today.
All right, coming up, we're going to sweep the dial, hear what Rob Manfred had to say about possibly continuing some of Major League Baseball changes beyond this season. Marshawn Lynch describing his golf cart joyride at Cal, and Ryan Fitzpatrick on being benched. That's all coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelter, Dave White, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Just before World Series Game 1 yesterday, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred spoke to the media about some of the changes they implemented this year. He said, quote, people were wildly unenthusiastic about the changes, and then when they saw them in action, they were much more positive. He said he would like to see the extra innings rule and the expanded playoffs continue into next season. With the expanded playoffs, he said, quote, I don't think we would do 16 like we did this year. I think we do have to be cognizant of making sure that we preserve the importance of our regular season. But I think something beyond the 10 that we're at would be a good change.
I like half of that. I do like the idea of expanding the playoffs from 10.
Well,
16,
what do you,
no. If they do 12.
What do you like, 12 or 14?
Well, 12. I still want it to be special. I want the regular season to truly matter.
But what if the Mariners were number 13 and they only took 12?
Bummer. I mean, it's still got to mean something. You still got to be special. You have to go out and earn your spot there. I don't want 16 this year. This year, anything goes. I didn't care. It's right. Fine. Expand the playoffs. If it's 14 teams, I'll live with it. If it's 12, I'll live with it. I think it's a good idea. The runner on second thing, I think, is so cheesy. It just feels cheap. It feels goofy, like something you do in your backyard. And again, this year, that's fine. But for next year, I don't want to see that come back.
I'm normally old school on stuff like that, but I think you need to think about the younger fan base. Baseball doesn't seem as popular to me as it used to be.
Do kids like that, though? Is that going to bring kids to the television, hoping the game gets
there? It'd be more action.
Well, I understand, but you're going to have to get a kid who otherwise wouldn't be interested in baseball to sit through the first nine to see that runner start on second base in the 10th.
Is that exciting enough? I agree with you that it's gimmicky, but I'm kind of at a point where it didn't bother me as much as I thought it would, and I thought it was kind of fun. There's some different strategic elements that enter into it. Should you try and move the runner along to third? Should you bunt?
Shouldn't you have to earn your spot to second base? You don't just get given second base. You gotta come up with a hit off that guy who's trying to strike you out with 98-mile-an-hour stuff. There's something to earning that spot and finding your way to second base.
Okay, where are you with the shift? Because Brent Stecker, the 710sports.com editor, he's really against the shift.
I don't like what it's done, but I also don't like the hitters just seem so reluctant to change anything. They try to power through the shift. You saw it forever with Seager. Just try to hit the ball hard. Let me just find a spot in the shift and power it through, rather than taking some of those outside pitches that we see them all roll over on because they're trying to yank it and going the other way with it. I think it makes the hitter better. Make them pay. If they're going to vacate an entire side of the baseball field, then make them pay.
Yeah, we need more balls in play, don't you think? I mean, whatever, because I think this was the first year where there were more strikeouts than hits for the first time.
Yeah, if they took that away, I wouldn't be bummed, but I'd also want hitters to really assume, all right, I'm going to work on taking that outside pitch and going the other direction with it and really making it punitive. You guys want to shift? Knock yourself out. I'm gonna just drive you nuts up here.
They probably don't even remember that I scored the game with a touchdown. They just remember when I bounced in a golf cart. And the first thing I do, I look to the left, I look to the right. Oh, it's a cart, the injury cart. My dad got my... You feel me, though? The keys was in. It was meant to happen. The keys was in there. It was facing in the direction I needed to go. So I slid in that thing, and I started yoking that motherfucker. Yeah, yeah. Start yoking through the crowd, through all the people, shh, 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 and I'm sliding, aka we call that profiling, and the crowd rush me, you know what I'm saying, though, they rush the shit. I ain't gonna make it to him, so I'm busting you, you know, and then I just, oh, shit, look at all these people, now I gotta get back, I'm finna go drop the car, now I gotta, now I'm just sliding my back. Now it's people running through, referees, yo, shh, yo, then it's fans, yo, yo, Seuss, fans break dead, shh, yoke them up back to the sideline, but I got a little bit sideways, shh, park that, threw the brake on, bounced off that motherfucker, what's happening?
That's Marshawn Lynch speaking with Matt Barnes on a YouTube show called Same Energy about taking that golf cart after the game when he played for Cal. I didn't understand half of what the heck he was talking about, but he's kind of entertaining. I like that he said, and it was facing the direction I needed to go.
Did he have the mascot with him? I forget.
I don't think so.
No, but he was on a joyride there.
I like the idea that it was the direction I needed to go. Really? Where were you going? Wasn't he talking about taking everybody to Sizzler, or was that a different video?
I'm not sure, but I do remember the golf cart.
Yeah, I remember that.
Going all over the place with that golf cart.
That's, yeah.
Probably everybody down there at Cal going, oh, I hope he isn't running anybody. And he's sure having a fun time there.
Yeah. He's
never gone on a joyride in a golf cart, Bob?
Did you understand most of what he was saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, did you?
Yo.
How about golf cart, joyride?
That part?
Have you done it?
Not illegal. I mean, certainly had been in a golf cart and pressed it to its maximum capabilities out there on the golf course.
Yeah, boy, golf carts sometimes. Boy, I was in Puerto Rico one time, and a guy went up on a side hill, and I was in the passenger seat, and I knew we were going down. I didn't know whether to jump out. Because if you jump out and you're on the right side and it's tipping over on you, I thought about the roof. The roof of it hitting me. So I made a savvy veteran move there at the very end, and I thought, okay, I'm going to just hang out in the cart and just
tuck and roll.
Yeah, I tucked and rolled.
Did you get thrown out, or you just
didn't get thrown out? And I'm proud to tell you that I had a beer in my hand and didn't lose a drop. Did not lose a drop.
You made Cougar Nation proud.
My heart just hurt all day. Like it was heartbreaking for me. Flo kind of said what he said and said what he said to you guys as well. And that's the decision and the direction that the organization is going in. And obviously, you know, we've talked in the past, me and you guys, about, you know, how I'm the placeholder, and this eventually was going to happen no matter, it was just a matter of kind of when, not if. And it broke my heart yesterday. And, you know, it's a tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with, but I'm going to do my best with it.
That's the voice of Ryan Fitzpatrick, who went on to say, I basically got fired yesterday, and my day today consisted of Zoom meetings with the guy who fired me and sitting in a room with the guy who replaced me for 4 hours. On the surface, I get it. I understand it's got to be jarring, even though you knew it was coming. As he said, he was sort of the placeholder, and they invest a top 10 pick into this kid. That's the future. You knew it was coming, but it doesn't make it any easier to deal with.
I'm torn on that one, because
I'm a little bit like, you're being a little melodramatic, man. You knew this was happening. You weren't under the illusion you weren't going to occupy this spot for two or three seasons. Then he's coming. I mean, you sort of knew it. Maybe they could have handled it better, because Brian Flores says he regrets that the players found out about the switch through social media rather than from him. They didn't handle it correctly, but the actual move, I mean, you're being paid to be, you know, who you are, man.
I'm torn, because I appreciate how candid he was, admitting that he was heartbroken about it. But at the same time, what you're saying, Bob, he knew that it was coming at some point this year. And being a bye week for Miami, I'd go back and forth, though, because if you're Fitzpatrick, you're going, hey, I was the quarterback that was in San Francisco that just, you know, pummeled the heck out of the 49ers. And then we shut out the Jets. We're 3-3. We have a chance to win this division, and now you're bringing in Tua. Yeah, I can see both sides there.
Yeah. All right, coming up, time to see if we gain some knowledge in this abbreviated show. What we learn, coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Jim's already cracking up. What are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing at a text that I received.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. On our text line or on your phone?
On my phone.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
hey, what's it cost to get your phone fixed anyway? I've dropped my phone a couple times and it's all cracked. And is it expensive?
To be honest, I've never had my phone repaired. I think you can always purchase those insurance plans that cover things on there. I guess my long-winded answer is I have no idea, Jim.
Man, my phone's a mess.
Maybe it's time to upgrade.
Do you have a case?
I don't have a case.
That didn't come from the
I did, and then somebody said that it's a germ carrier, and so I got rid of the case. And then, of course, I dropped it a couple times and wished I had the case.
Maura, I like that you started talking and Jim turned to the control room.
I did.
Thinking you were back there to look at you and respond. Which you'll be, can we say, you'll what's going on tomorrow?
Yeah.
Maura will be in the building with us.
Yeah.
For the first time.
First time since March.
Man.
Yeah, Maura will be here and I'm going home.
Yeah, Dave will be back.
Yeah.
So Dave will be back in studio tomorrow with me. Maura will be here and her in the producer's booth back there. And then Jim has to go back home.
I'll go hang out with Bruin.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay. She'd appreciate that.
Yeah. She's going to be lit. She's going to be, it'll be a little shocking. Frank had to adjust for a while, but they'll get there. Bruin will be just fine, Maura. Don't worry. What did we learn today?
Well, we learned from Brian Monet that defensive tackles aren't stressing over the lack of holding penalties.
How much harder is it this year when these guys aren't being called for a holding as much on the other side of the line as they used to be?
Yeah, it's not. I ain't complaining about anything. I ain't worried about it. Just trying to knock him back. That's the main thing.
All right. So he just kind of brushed
that
off.
I'm not sure why I laughed at that answer. Must have been one of those nervous laughter moments.
My favorite part.
Was it? Were you wondering why I was laughing? Because it wasn't really funny, his comment?
I just thought it was a big laugh for the comment.
Jim was just trying to get through it. He had to go solo at the last second. He did a great job with it. We had some technical issues with my equipment at home, so Jim had to take it over. You did a fine job.
I like in the past how it's always been, Jim's having technical issues, connecting issues, and today it was you, Bobby.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed that.
See, I give you a compliment, and now you want to take shots. This is how Jim works. All right, it was a so-so interview. I was just trying to, inflate your ego.
I love you, Bob.
I love you too, buddy. What else did we learn, Maura?
The mention of a certain game this week made the professor ill.
John, we've got the Giants and Eagles matching up for Thursday night football, which in most years you'd go, okay.
I'm thinking of the game.
Yeah, that's a collective reaction from the football community out there.
I mean,
how do you think John feels about that game?
He's not looking forward to it. Might be a good one, though. Thursday night game? What the heck? Be a competitive game.
I think it will be?
Yeah. We're football fans. We'll be watching Thursday night football, won't we? There's no World Series game tomorrow. We'll have a full show tomorrow.
That's true. I'll definitely watch it. I don't expect to see quality football, though.
Well, as long as it's competitive, as long as it's, a game into the fourth quarter, I'll think about Michael Bradley watching the game.
are you pulling for either team?
No. No horse in the race.
Is this computer up in here? I wanted to play this. You remember this? We closed the show with this Clayton drop.
Oh, can you find it?
A role play group?
I haven't heard that in a while. It just made me think of it.
No, John. You
got
to hand it to John, though, trying to get through that.
Oh, and if they didn't cut him off, he would have kept going. He was talking to Salk, Brock and Salk, and Salk's like, John, go get some water. Go get some water. I mean, if they would have just turned their mics off and sat back, he would have powered through that.
He would have.
Might have gone on for another 30 seconds or so. But yeah.
And it was awesome because what he was trying to get out was an answer to one of Howdy's wild card questions about those role-playing groups where they go do fake kingdoms and stuff. So he was trying to say role-playing. He was coughing like
roll,
that.
Yeah, roll. So good. What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned Jim still isn't over losing his Michael Kendricks bet to Danny.
It was a shocking development. Did you see the little graphic at the bottom of ESPN?
I did.
Breaking news. Kendrick's sentencing hearing postponed yet again.
I don't know how our legal system works, Jim. I don't know what to say about it.
And maybe that was one of the holdups. Maybe the Seahawks were waiting on that. But good news, it's been postponed until January 13th.
Oh, really?
And on January 13th, it'll be postponed until June 24th.
Okay.
Yeah.
That whole thing just irks you.
It does irk me. I admit it.
What if he finally
I think he's getting preferential treatment because he's a football player, okay? There, I said it. Some guys always say that, right? I said it.
What if they finally go through with the hearing, whenever January, whatever day it's scheduled for, and then it's some level of fine and community service?
You're right at this point. It's going to be probation.
Are you going to be mad?
No, I'm not going to be mad. I don't understand the legal system. I just don't.
I don't either.
I don't know why. I mean, this sentencing hearing has been postponed now probably six or seven times, and it's been, he's like 3 years removed from doing the insider trading that he was a convicted felon for. But
by the time he, sentenced, it may not be against the law anymore.
But it's a victimless crime, and so play football.
Is it his attorneys that are making this happen, or is it?
Know.
I don't even know what causes this to be delayed each time.
Yeah, and it's bad karma on my part. You should never bet that someone's going to jail.
You deserve to lose to Danny.
I think according to the gods up above, that's probably not cool.
That's not somewhere cool. In the Ten Commandments. No, never root for somebody to go to jail.
Yeah, it's not cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Is that degenerate level?
Yeah, I deserve that.
Yeah. Betting on jail time.
Yeah.
Jim reaching a new
level. What was the other one that we mentioned that you said was degenerate level? Betting on Little League or?
Oh, that O.J. Simpson would be guilty.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I did that. I did that a long time ago. That seemed like a lock, but it wasn't.
Same world. You're betting on jail time and a verdict.
Yeah. I'm a loser. What well, do you
you're,
want?
You're a gambler. You're a gambler. Did we learn anything else, Maura?
I don't have any more clips of what we learned, but something we'll have to get into tomorrow. Ken Norton Jr. just spoke to the media. Apparently, Seahawks rookie tight end Stephen Sullivan has been added to their roster as a defensive end. Ken Norton Jr. says he has the look and build of a great pass rusher.
Well, that's kind of cool they're doing that. Because they converted
Sweezy. So they're
going
opposite of
Yeah, they converted
Cable.
Sweetie.
Or Sweezy.
Yeah. Yeah. Converted Sweezy from a defensive lineman to an offensive lineman, and so they're trying that with. And Sullivan was also considered a wide receiver too. So
yeah.
Now he's going.
He was
from,
like, tight end, wide receiver to defensive end. Yeah.
It's
all right.
Interesting journey.
There you go. That does it for us. I want to thank our guests Brian Monet and John Clayton. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page 710sports.com and click that podcast button. We're going to send you to the World Series game number 2 between the Dodgers and the Rays coming up. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.